We're going to continue to move right through today's programming into the development side of the world and talking about building in terms of responsibility. That said, ladies and gentlemen, a big round of applause for our next panel and their moderator, Natalie of Coin Story Podcast and Bitcoin Educator. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for our panel.
I'm so excited to be back at the Bitcoin Builders Conference. I'm one of the least techie people ever, so excited to have you guys explain it all to me. First of all, I want to introduce our panelists. We have Jameson Lopp from Casa, Charles Mankey from Wolf Financial, Alex Miller from Hero Systems, and Paul Stork, Layer 2 Labs. They're not necessarily sitting in that order, but I want to first just really focus in on the title of this talk, Building on Bitcoin Responsibly. What does that mean to all of you?
It's tricky. I mean, there's a number of ways you could look at it. But I think for me, the first thing that comes to mind is just the fact that, you know, what we have here is a shared resource. You could call it a platform, if you will. And of course, there's the permissionless aspect of it is that, you know, anyone who is following the protocol can do whatever they want, even if it pisses other people off or maybe even prices them out of doing what they want. So there, it's something you could even call coopetition in a way. It's like a lot of us are all working together in the sense that we're building on these ecosystems and making them more useful and more valuable. But we all are also, we're also competing for the, you know, the scarce resource that is the system.
Coopetition. I like that. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'll zoom out like a little bit. When it comes to building responsibly, one thing that's interesting, we host spaces all day and the conversations are various myriad of different topics across people who have failed, succeeded, rugged, and all these things. And what's interesting is in Web 2, you get regulators that protect ignorance for the users, but Web 3 doesn't have that. So you end up in this space where the moral compass is more important on the builder in Web 3 than it is in Web 2, because in Web 2, the moral is protected by the regulators. And that's why I think, like, if you're looking at a leader in Web 3, who they are is way more important than in Web 2. And so for me, I think it's the nature of the person is actually more important than necessarily how they're building, because there's a lot of ways to cut corners in crypto. It's you see it everywhere where people are rugging, hurting other people, you know, starting new things. And so I just, I think it goes down to the character of the person, not to make it a very deep thing, but it kind of ends up being that way. So,
well, one thing people love about Bitcoin is it sort of returns accountability and personal responsibility is
absolutely
important. And maybe we'll dig into some of that, because anyone, like you said, can build on Bitcoin. And in our current system, we do have this framework of regulators and gatekeepers. Yes. But if you're a freedom maximalist, you believe in free markets, then the free market is the best referee, right? Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important to build on Bitcoin?
I think it comes down to sort of a combination of a couple of things of what do we owe to each other and what do we owe to our users? Obviously, crypto world in general has had plenty of scams and active scams. People, we can all agree that that is bad and you shouldn't be doing that.
Sure.
But we've also had plenty of people who just obfuscate things in an effort to grow, right? They don't necessarily intend to be stealing, but they do end up harming a lot of people intentionally or unintentionally. And again, I think that's happened, to Jameson's point, sometimes it can happen between builders, depending on how resources are being used, or it can be happening to end users. And so I think that's really the question is, how do we take people who, you know, do have, let's say, you know, pure intentions, they're not looking to scam or anything, but maybe not realizing what their larger responsibilities are to be building in an ethical way?
Absolutely. I think in general, people want the Bitcoin protocol to like resist change to some degree, and they don't want to be like beholden to a team of developers who have to decide something. Or this is like a very interesting and nuanced conversation where you could talk to like about CVEs and like to what extent are you unable to, like, if you wanted to just run an old version forever, would you actually be able to do that? And Jameson has some great research on his blog where he tries to run old versions and things like that, which is fascinating. But I think the overall picture is something like, we don't want people to come and destroy Bitcoin. Gavin Andreessen had that metaphor about you're flying in an airplane and you want to swap out the engine while it's still in the air or something. So I do think it's like kind of a conservative, it's a conservative technical community and a conservative user base, and it does want property rights over something. It wants to actually own something. So I think that would be part of it.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the challenges of just building on Bitcoin in a way that provides the most opportunity but doesn't anger the people that are really passionate about the blockchain being what it was originally in 2009? Because I feel like you have to weave a little bit. You have to carefully, you know, manage expectations, and there are probably some challenges technically that come up as well.
Yeah, certainly. I think the soft fork was originally invented like in 2012 because it was unable. You can look at comments that Gavin Andreessen made back then, where it was like, we cannot reach every user, and not everyone will upgrade. But if we do this other thing, it won't matter that not everyone. We won't need everyone to upgrade the software. Basically, this is like a disputed point by some people, but. You can talk like that was back in 2012, the idea of we will not force everyone to upgrade. We will allow people to just not upgrade and they'll still be on the same network. And then since then, the standards have been raised even higher of just like not touching anything. Now we've gotten to the point. I mean, I think the soft fork is an ingenious way of actually protecting people's defending the users against developers. But even now, the big phrase for most of last year was like, this is being built on Bitcoin, you know, without a soft fork or something. You have BitVM where people are like zeroing out bytes. This is like how far we've come to like not touch this. I think that's kind of an interesting.
It's almost
point.
An intractable problem, though. Yeah. I think it really goes back to what Paul said about property rights, is that, you know, one of the fundamental, values held by Bitcoiners, and of course this is very hand-wavy because we're not a homogenous group, but it is it's not disenfranchising people. But I think that if you look at it over a long period of time of history, you can realize that even if the protocol doesn't change, you know, the rest of the world changes, and how people use the protocol may change and may, you know, the free market, if you want to call it that, may disenfranchise people because certain attributes of these networks and how you can use them will change because new use cases come up. They may price out other use cases. And so now we're stuck in this really weird place where, you know, the narrative, of course, has gone to, okay, we build in layers. But even what Paul was talking about with soft forks of like, okay, we can change the protocol and do it without breaking people's money and disenfranchising them. Even the concept of soft forking has become somewhat controversial. Like we haven't had a soft fork in several years. And even though there are a number of really good proposals out there, the developers have become very reticent to actually run the gauntlet of being a champion for a consensus change, even if it's a backwards compatible consensus change. And part of it, I think, is a lot of the vitriol that comes from certain segments of the user base that says it's too dangerous to change anything, and then they'll point at different examples. And the main thing that I've been trying to get across is that if you look at how scaling is done with layers, even historically, we had to make changes to the base layer in order to make second layers possible. You know, at least like with Lightning, if you want to be able to have unilateral exit from some new set of game theory that requires some new rules to it, then you're probably going to need some new rules that you can enforce on the base layer. And I think that that's still true today. And I think a lot of people would agree that in some sense, you know, Lightning is one of the only like pure unilateral exit layers that we have, and a lot of them you can't necessarily get out of that layer without, you know, asking permission from someone. But there's a lot of possibility for us to build other layers with unilateral exit if we make the right changes to the base layer.
Oh, really? So it's dependent on that? Can you help me, as a non-techie person, a non-developer, better understand this debate? Because I see it more frequently online now, the idea of whether Bitcoin's base layer should ossify or not? And what are the two sides, thoughtfully, the straw man, the steel man? Can you guys talk about it?
You're the ossification guy, Jameson.
Yeah, but actually, I was going to say that. I would think of Jameson as that, but you don't. But see, it's a very nuanced thing. Like, I definitely don't think of you as the completely pro ossification guy, because, of course, it is kind of a bizarre thing. I mean, some things we should definitely mention are something like maybe like even something like as extreme as like software dependencies or something, where it's like if you're going to build a house from scratch. You don't build like the plywood from scratch or the screws from scratch. So there's all these like people who have built like how to multiply a matrix or something, these tiny sub libraries that like Bitcoin Core is using. And those people update those all the time. Those like Heartbleed, there was that famous thing where there was a cryptographic library that everyone was using, but it had a terrible bug in it. So it didn't work at all, actually. So that would be like a bunch of people are building houses with these screws, and it turns out the screws, like, you know, didn't work. They're made out of glass or something.
Yeah. So
my favorite was left trim on the node libraries, where like someone just basically deletes a dependency that's at the top that has 1,000 dependencies, which all have 1,000 dependencies, and one deletion of one repo basically wipes out thousands of software programs. And I think what that kind of comes back to is like we can get into the debates over ossification, what shouldn't happen. I think, again, when we come back to the idea of like responsibility, it's about being transparent and honest in what you're doing. You're never going to get everyone to agree on a change. You're never going to be able to do anything or even not do anything without some people both disliking it and even potentially being harmed by it, or, you know, harmed in the sense of like ending up in a worse off place.
The status quo is also not acceptable to everyone.
People get harmed by the status quo. So I think that's where it comes back to the like, are you being honest about what you're doing and transparent? I think like there was a lot of, let's call it, drama around the Bitcoin testnet 3 earlier this year and with its performance based on, but like, since Jameson, you're involved in some of that, but you said very clearly what you were doing and why it needed to happen. It caused a lot of pain for a lot of people, like myself included, my company, and like because of just stuff we were running on top of it. But like, if nobody does anything, you're never going to get any progress. And so that's why I think it comes back to the, are you being honest and upfront about what you're doing and why, so that other people can make their choices and adapt to engage in it. And that's fundamentally what kind of comes back to that core idea of property rights.
So I also see it as it's a 10-year history now. 10 years ago, we were given the promise of sidechains, of permissionless two-way peg sidechains. And the idea there was to have basically infinitely scalable and growable ecosystem where we don't have to do everything on Bitcoin base chain, because anyone who wants to can go create their own other network that you can send your Bitcoin over to, unilaterally permissionless, yada yada, like upholding all of the ideals of Bitcoin. And we never got that. And as a result, we've had, call it, shifts in narratives and sort of coping with the fact
that we don't sour grapes, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, there are protocol changes that we can make that I think would enable us to finally start to achieve a future where the builders who want to go do crazy stuff can do that in a way that is actually, cryptographically tied to the Bitcoin base chain without having to create like a multi-sig federation that, of course, could potentially be corrupted and fail.
Charles, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah. I mean, this topic is so nuanced because, like, when we'll host a space of just Bitcoin OGs, layer two companies will come in and market to those companies. But the tribalism that happens around those companies is so stark, it's hard to change their minds on something they believe in past, because Bitcoin represents more than just a technology. It represents like a freedom or an altruism. And when people stand for that, it's really hard for you to start messing with it, because you're not messing with a tech. You're messing with an ideology, and people get weird about that. So I think, like, ultimately, like, going into runes, runes was stuffing transactions, and then what was happening is regular transaction would get stuck in the mempool for 6 and 7 and 8 blocks, and they wouldn't come down for long periods of time. Now the miners get rewarded, but what ends up happening is peer-to-peer regular transfer gets pushed out. So, and I'm not making a stark contrast that I believe in either way, because I believe if something can be manipulated, it should. Because just because you have a door to your house and it's unlocked doesn't mean that that's safety. And if there's opportunity for Bitcoin to be manipulated, safety only comes by manipulating it, because people always change on the precipice of difficulty. Like, ossification is the idea of, like, what could happen. But I think the ossification becomes way more at play when they break it. And unfortunately, Bitcoin is such a big beast at this point. Like, if we break it, it's like, will something come out and replace it? If we end up in a position where there's no more peer-to-peer transfers, Runes is absolutely taken over, regular transaction fees are no longer getting into the block, they're stuck in the mempool forever. I mean, it's a stark thing, but, and I don't necessarily, you know, believe either way is like the right way. I just, I think inherently, you either have to ossify it or manipulate it until it breaks and then have another Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, I think this is a good point of, like, similar to what I think, Jameson, you were saying earlier, which is like, how, like, the end user has expectations and needs, and like, how ossified will Bitcoin be if it is ultimately replaced by something else? That's like negative 100% ossification. You know what I mean? Because you changed it out of existence by just the user not demanding it anymore. And we have seen quite a few, you know, changes over just a short amount of time. You know, I've been alive only so long, but like, there was a time before widespread internet access. There was a time before people had, there was a time when there was only one computer in every house, right? There was a time when, before smartphones. So I don't know. It's the ossification strategy does seem like a big risk. And I think this was part of the sidechain's vision, was that you could ossify L1 very safely and in a very sustainable way, precisely because it's kind of a paradox, but really it's more of an inevitability, which is like, because you need to cater to different people and they won't always agree, and some of them are early adopters and some of them are late adopters. And so you'd have the L1, which would be the same, and then you'd have all this other new, these new L2 things that would all be blockchains. So you'd explore the blockchain space. And
you know, Bitcoin has made me think more profoundly about incentives. And Alex, you brought up the idea that it has to be the ethics and the morals of the person. But we've also seen controversy over even funding developers. Yeah. And have any of you ever worked at a corporation where you've had a mid-year review? Anybody? Yeah, you remember those? The thing that frustrated me about that is, they have to tell you something. Mm-hmm. They have to find something wrong for you to improve on. You will never, you could be the best employee in the world, you'll never have a mid-year review that tells you there's nothing you can work on. Is there a component of that? Like, if you're funded, don't you have to start tinkering and almost find something wrong, and then that is its own kind of corrupted incentive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the reason that, you know, some folks who are for, I'll just call it pro complete ossification, let's say, don't like it. And, you know, yes, if you have people looking at a problem, they're going to find something to work on. At the same time, I don't think reasonable people, for the most part, are going to say there's nothing about Bitcoin that needs attention paid to it, even if you don't want substantial changes. But going back to that idea of incentives, which I think is exactly right, people are not going to stop trying to do more on top of Bitcoin. I'd actually go so far as to say it's immoral not to, because of how unbelievably tiny and concentrated the user base of Bitcoin is today. Like, you cannot say that you believe in, like, the freedom and optionality and power that Bitcoin provides and say you're happy with where it's scaled out to. Oh, yay, we have, like, a couple million wallets. We have a million wallets that have one Bitcoin on. There are 8 billion people on this world, right? And most of the people who hold a full Bitcoin live in the U.S., which, like, again, we can argue about the current state of our government and whatnot here, but it's a hell of a lot better than a lot of other authoritarian regimes. And, like, the reason that I work on Layer 2s is because I really believe in scaling Bitcoin out to as many people as we possibly can. And if we just leave it locked up with a small group, like, that group has a lot of incentive to not break the chain. And I'm, to be clear, I do not want to break the L1. But if you've already got $10 million in asset worth, let's say, on Bitcoin today, yes, you are going to be a lot less interested in anything that potentially risks that. But what about the person who only has $10 on Bitcoin and can't do anymore because the transaction fees are too high? And that's not going to change because people do want to do new and innovative things on it. Like, if we don't do something to scale it, and I think sidechains is absolutely the way we need to go because it's the only thing that's viable on it, we're just trapping it as a toy. You know, go back to the pet rock analogy. and not actually bringing like that promise and the freedom that it provides to the people who actually need it.
That's why I think it's somewhat of an intractable problem, and also because both of you have talked about, you know, breaking Bitcoin, and that is subjective in and of itself, depending on what your use case is and your desired properties of Bitcoin are. But I think if we're talking about responsibly building, then we have to understand that we're still exploring the possibilities. And so to say that we should stop exploring possibilities because we might do something wrong, I believe that that is projecting from a position of fear. And it's a loser mentality, in my view. And this may sound like overly bullish or optimistic, but I don't think it's possible to break Bitcoin. By which I mean, I think it's possible to maybe temporarily screw with Bitcoin so that it doesn't work as people expect for a while. But I believe that the reason Bitcoin works is the anti-fragility. And why is it anti-fragile? It's not because of any one particular aspect of the protocol or the way that the network works. It's because of us. Mm-hmm. It's because there are innumerable people out there who are either, you know, morally or ideologically or financially incentivized to make sure that this thing keeps running. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been a decade since we have broken the network in the sense that it wasn't working for a few hours. Yeah. But what happened? Everyone came together. They said, oh shit, we broke it. Let's fix it. So, yes, maybe we'll have another one of those things happen if we continue experimenting.
But
and
the funny thing is that thing, that was not like a soft fork. That's the other thing, is these are like unexpected emergency things. That was like an optimization refactor type of switching the database or whatever. So, and the other thing, the Matt Corrales thing, that was also a refactor to shave off like 600 microseconds or something. So the bugs are not the soft forks that people, the ossify people want to like, ossify now, they want to like do like a campaign and stop. The soft fork is definitely not the enemy of the, you know, ossification, I think. But it's these weird outages were because of unexpected things. So that's a...
Do you guys forecast potentially having another block war over something?
Yeah, eventually, I think, yes.
Over what and why?
Well, I do think, in general, there is a complacency right now that has taken hold. And so people think that it's a foregone conclusion that Bitcoin will succeed. And so these people just think it's inevitable. And I think that's actually the kiss of death. And see, normally when there are other people who talk about ossification long before Bitcoin. They talk about, like, there's this famous book, The Innovator's Dilemma. And there's this other book, Exit, Voice, and Loyalty. These are, like, famous books. Balaji has brought these up at Bitcoin conferences, so maybe people have heard of them. But usually the story is, like, the organization ossifies, and then it eventually has to be replaced. Like, there's really not that many stories where it's, like, it ossified, and then it lived happily ever after. That is actually very rare. So the status quo is not going to be... I mean, you said something very good, I thought, about, like... So it reminded me of Satoshi. You were talking about 8 billion people. We're like, we have to go 8 billion people or zero, I think, actually. And Satoshi Nakamoto has this quote where he says... He's talking on the forum, and he says, I'm sure that in 20 years, there will either be a very large transaction volume or no transaction volume.
Yeah.
So that was obviously... You can interpret it in various ways... I don't want to get into anything about the block size, because I think it's completely irrelevant, because we can have a small ossified L1 block size and still have a large transaction volume on the L2s. But I think he was definitely right. Like, either this idea will succeed, and you're either growing or dying, I think, you know? So it's like, it's either going to be like the internet, where it just takes over and becomes this thing, or it will, something else will do that, and then this will just fade, and it will be nothing. It will be Esperanto.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's going to be conflict, and there's conflict because the developers who know what they're doing, they know what all of the technical problems with Bitcoin are. And, for example, Rusty Russell has his great consensus cleanup. Like, there are known ways that adversarial entities could attack the network now and break it from pretty much everyone's perspective. And we know how to fix those things. and to throw up our hands and say, no, we shouldn't fix them because doing anything is dangerous is, you know, once again, I think a very silly position to take, you know, from a really fear projection perspective.
You know, you made me think of Bitcoin Core developer Gloria said it on stage that basically a military attack could bring down the Bitcoin network and we're not prepared yet. And people think that we're in this very safe place. And it terrifies people who are non-technical and don't understand the things you do. So we're wrapping up now. So give us something to look forward to with some hope here. You guys obviously are working on Bitcoin because you think it will succeed, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, my optimistic take is that, you know, builders going to build. And, you know, you can hate the idea of changing Bitcoin as much as you want, but you can't stop the builders from proposing changes. The only tricky thing now is as I said, it's kind of builders finding themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place of knowing that there are improvements that are, you know, highly desirable, and knowing that there are factions of people who are going to fight against those. It's a really weird position to be in, but I'll do whatever I can to support people. And, you know, if I have to be a dick about it, I'm happy to do so.
Well, you got to make your case, right? And then the free market should decide, right?
Yeah, no, I think I'm relatively neutral. You know, I think without veto power in any central position, you always end up with progression, no matter what. And I think that, like, what I mean is that if there's two people and they can manipulate a thing, the one person that can't or won't is always going to sit by the wayside, and the other guy will. If there's no central entity to stop, it always ends up manipulated. So I think it's a matter of time. I think we end up manipulated, and it'll get to that position where we're, you know, kind of figuring out what we want to do with it after the fact. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think as Paul kind of pointed out, that Satoshi said even 12 or 13 years ago, like, Bitcoin's in an evolve or die place, and that doesn't necessarily mean you need drastic changes. You need to try, and you're never going to do everything you need on the L1. And it's going to be just as much of a fight to double capacity on the L1 as it is to introduce things that allow 10,000x scaling on the L2s. And so I think it's focusing on if that end goal, again, is really, and for me, it's how do we provide an alternative, like, financial system globally. We've got to focus on that 10,000x increase view all the way out there, and just figure out, cool, how do we protect the L1 as best as we can? We don't want to wreck it, but we got to give the things that do that actually make it possible to scale it out that much.
Get to a billion.
Okay. Yes. I do have my own L2 proposal, which is BIP300, and there's test software you can download and play with for yourselves, layer2labs.com/downloads, and I have stuff there. We have a Zcash level privacy and planetary scale. I have a bunch of articles I've also written about that. So if you want a little bit of hope, you could go and try the software yourself. A lot of people have, like, PowerPoint slides or whatever, which is great. I actually think the industry is already moved past that, and there are a lot of people who, if you can code something, it will exist. And it has, the software we've written is for all three operating systems, and it has buttons you can click. It has a GUI, so. So I would try that out and look at the proposal is the only thing it does on L1 is use unused opnop 5 to count to 13,000 over and over again. It's a little bit more than that, but that's basically all it does. And it's a completely opt-in and also reversible, really, if you think about it. I think the soft fork is we still have a little bit of time, and so I'm going to ramble about the soft fork in general, which is that this whole reason the soft fork was invented in 2012, as I alluded to earlier, is that before, everything was like, we changed to a new version, but the soft fork was, people did not need, not everyone needed to, only the people who wanted to use the new feature had to upgrade. This included 51% of the miners, so you could say maybe that's not true, but the miners want to collect the transaction fee, so they're also users. So the whole point of the soft fork is it was a change and not a change at the same time. So even though it is a creative act of a change, it's not really as much of a change as people might think. And it's very underappreciated for that reason.
Well, thank you guys so much. I think we've learned a lot. Really appreciate being on stage with you, Paul, Alex, Charles, Jameson. Give it up for them. Thank you.